Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Near and Queer to My Heart podcast. I'm your host, Amanda G. Thanks so much for supporting us and tuning in. This podcast means so much to us. It is keeping us going, and we are so excited to continue to bring the lives of queer performers to y'all so that everyone can get to know them a little better so that we can keep having queer voices and queer spaces. And thank you so much for supporting that. One thing that I think is so interesting about social media and I guess, you know, the podcast platform is that it's all audio. But when I scroll through my social media, there are people in my life that I haven't heard their voice in like 20 years. And with the podcast, what's interesting, our last guest, Katie Burton, I was, you know, being a nosy stalker. And I was, you know, she made a post about the podcast episode, and then some of her friends were commenting. And a few people actually were saying, like, wow, it was so nice to just hear your voice and to just hear you. And I really did love that. And, you know, I hope that we are helping people stay connected and feel connected. Even if you haven't seen someone or heard someone in a long time, it's nice to have that, to have a little more than just words on a screen or a picture. I realize I have friends who have kids. I don't know what that kid sounds like. I mean, they could sound like Barry White or they could sound like Roseanne. I have no idea. I have no idea because all I see are pictures. That's all we see is the image and some text about what they're doing. So it's nice to have this podcast, which we can still do during COVID, and to connect with folks. This episode, we're bringing you someone who I think her parents can just see into the future because they named her Joy. And that is exactly what she is. She is a true Joy. Joy Clark. She's a New Orleans-based musician. Stay tuned after the episode. She gave us her new song that we're going to play for y'all. Really excited. We had such a good, uplifting, positive conversation, which is, you know, what I really needed in this time. And I was so happy we had this opportunity. So let's get to it. Let's get to Joy Clark. Joy Clark, how are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well considering COVID.
I swore every time I was like, I'm not going to start the podcast off by asking people how they're doing, but I genuinely want to know how people are doing.
Yeah, I feel you. But you know what? It's real. It's real out here. I was talking to Camille today about how I feel like I've forgotten how to socialize and how to talk to people. I feel like I'm pretty much a people person. I think I'm actually pretty good at small talk. And I miss it. And I feel like I am rusty at socializing and simple interactions because it's so hard now.
Yeah. And people, I feel like now people just want to go deep right away. Like you don't have that small talk. People are just like, let's just talk about the world ending.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, I kind of just wanted to talk about how it's kind of cooler today because the humidity wasn't as high, you know, you know.
It wasn't as terrible in New Orleans as it has been.
It was sort of like a late May day, you know.
Yeah, I didn't sweat through my clothes within 5 minutes. It was more like a 10-minute sweat through.
Exactly. It wasn't as bad. But yeah, I'm doing okay. This whole situation has been like a blessing and a curse. I feel like I've been getting things done and I've been pushing through the perfectionism and really practicing my craft and doing things. And then there's the other side where I feel like I'm totally becoming a hermit. So
yeah, we're all kind of becoming hermits, just not by choice, because even when you socialize, it is very difficult. Like I've gone out. I went out. Well, I have a friend that's moving to Dallas. So I was like, I have to see her. before she moves. So we went to a bar that has outdoor seating. We sat away from everybody. But anytime someone like walked near our table, it was just like this high panic alert. It was, you know, it's different.
Yeah, it is. It's weird.
I'm like a go with the flow person, right? So it's just like, okay, COVID's here. Okay, you can't go into your office at all. And then now I go in very rarely. You have to wear a mask. You can't be within 6 feet of people. You can't do comedy anymore. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of like, okay, this is what it is. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, at what point am I going to like flip my shit?
Yeah, I know. Just, I say hang in there.
Yeah, because it's like, what choice do we have?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you and your partner, Camille, from our episode 2, you went on a road trip recently, right?
Yeah, we had to get out of here. We did a day of protest. We marched, and it was a beautiful protest. Everybody wore their masks. We felt pretty safe, and it was really great to see just people coming together and marching about the same thing. But then we kind of looked around us, and we were like, okay, we don't want to spend this whole time like protesting and marching, because we've done a lot of that. So she got furloughed, and I haven't been like playing, you know, shows. They're shut down. So we were like, you know what? We don't have anywhere to be. Probably won't be like this again. So let's just rent a car and like just get out of here for a while. And that's what we did. So we stopped in Austin. We went to New Mexico to see my family, to see my sister and her family. We saw her family in Austin. And then we went to the Grand Canyon. We just kept going. We went to the Grand Canyon. We went to Las Vegas. We went to LA. We have some friends out there. We went to Northern California. And it was beautiful. It was kind of like a protest travel. I've always wanted to take a trip like that, and I was always scared of like small towns or cops or being kidnapped. And it's like, you know what? This is our country. Let's just take this time and like, let's just go on this road trip and totally enjoy ourselves and enjoy the country. And it was beautiful. I wouldn't change it.
Because I saw it and I was like, I was so happy that y'all were doing that. Because it looked like a dream trip. And then I was also, you know, had all of course, the anxieties. How was traveling? I can't even think about leaving. So I'm just like, how was that?
Actually, it was actually chill. And I really enjoyed driving because there wasn't that many people on the road. We probably hit one traffic snag, and it was just kind of smooth sailing. It differed from if we were in a small town. Most people were not wearing masks. So you could kind of tell, like, if it was a small town or if it was a red state, you could just kind of tell, which is really interesting. But I mean, I was okay, like, the whole time. Nothing crazy happened. We had a lot of white people speaking to us more. Like,
in a good way.
Yeah. Like totally in a good way, which I thought was really interesting. And I think it was more funny and also kind of sweet. Yeah. So I found that white people were being a little bit more like conscious of black people. And I kind of found that comforting.
Yeah. No, that's really great. Cause you know, another thing, not just with COVID, but with everything that's going on with, you know, reading that these are the biggest protests that have ever happened and wanting actual change to come out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like you saw actual change. Like you saw people that, you know, were engaging with you in a way that sounded good and positive.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're a musician, and I'm going to ask you about the history of that because I'm always fascinated by how people knew that this was kind of the thing that they were meant to do. But before we get to that, I just want to ask how post-COVID, because I know you've done a few shows post-COVID, and I know, you know, I can only speak from like the stand-up perspective of how hard it is to not have a live audience and to be doing these Zoom shows and to be performing in a different way and kind of adjusting our craft. Are you experiencing that? What is that looking like?
I have done a couple of Zoom shows, and it is pretty strange to kind of just play to people and not have that immediate response. And it's kind of like an ego check, because it's like, okay, why do I need applause after I finish a song? Like, shouldn't I be playing for myself? So it's strange. And then it's also kind of freeing in a certain way. I've just kind of had to, hey, just just play like there's nobody watching you, you know, like you're just totally playing for yourself, which is kind of hard to do. But I think it's a good practice because sometimes people aren't listening to you. So you just have to share your heart and not be so concerned.
Definitely. I think that's a good, see, you took a positive out of that, of like, now you can see more clearly to play for yourself.
Yeah.
The last Zoom show I did, I was like, I am treating this like this is Carnegie fucking Hall. I am treating it like there are 20,000 people and they've all paid to see me. And at the end, I asked my girlfriend, I was like, how many people were on the show? And she was like, I don't want to tell you. And then I was like, no, don't tell me. And she said, seven. And I was like, And I was like, does that include you? And she's like, yes. I was like, well, okay. This is just about accurate with what I played in person. But I treated it like, because I don't know, because you're not like seeing it, you know?
You're not seeing people, you're not seeing the impact. No, I totally get that. I totally, that is good.
Are you from New Orleans?
Yes, I am. I grew up on the West Bank.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I grew up in Harvey, and I recently moved from the West Bank, like 4 years ago or so. So yeah, I'm from the area. I'm a hometown girl.
And for those who aren't from New Orleans or not familiar with it, the West Bank, we have a bridge that divides the Mississippi River. And when you cross the bridge, it's just the West Bank. And people might talk shit about it, but the West Bank also talks shit about the East Bank. So, yeah, it's a little rivalry in New Orleans.
You know, it's such a silly thing because the city is so small. And it's like, it's still New Orleans. Like, it's like 10 minutes away. Yeah, on where you live, you know.
No, and there's such animosity, and I'm just like, why? I think I have no problem with the West Bank. I think y'all have like a lot of great stuff over there.
We really do. I think the food is cheaper too.
It's cheaper, and there's some good food over there.
Really great food. Yeah, lots of really great Vietnamese food and shawarma and all that good stuff.
You had this like New Orleans vibe about you, so but I was like, I don't know, she could just be a cool person. Or that could be the vibe she grew up with. Like,
well, thank you.
And you're a musician and a singer. What instruments do you play? I know you play guitar, right?
Yeah, I am a guitarist. That's the only instrument that I can play well. It, like, I wanted to play more. I would like to play more. Like, I can play drums decently. I'm a guitarist and I am a singer songwriter.
And when did you first start singing and when did you first start playing guitar?
Singing came first because that's a lot cheaper. My parents are ministers. My dad's a minister and he would sing a lot and I would harmonize with him in, you know, Christian contemporary songs, gospel songs, you know. I remember singing a song in church for the first time when I had, it may have been before I got a guitar. I was probably 11. And that's the first time I remember singing. And then I remember performing a solo at church when I was maybe like 13 years old. And I was playing my guitar and I was singing. And I remember playing the song really fast. And I was sweating. I was shaking. I was so nervous.
Okay. So did you learn because of church or was church just where you performed?
Church was where I was exposed to live music. I remember we used to go to a predominantly white church in New Orleans East, like a long, very long time ago. And I remember seeing the guy that was playing the guitar at the church. I remember seeing it. I was maybe like 5 years old. And I was like, that looks so cool. Like, that is, I think I thought it was sexy and I didn't know sexy. It was like, there is some, like, that is me. Like, that's what I need to be doing. And so it took about 7 years, but so, you know, church and music kind of goes hand in hand, you know.
Yeah. When did you start pursuing music as more of a, like a career or, you know, taking that path of a solo artist?
Not really until maybe like 2010, 2011. It was sort of one of those things where I'd perform at like poetry nights and I wasn't really taking it seriously. I was just kind of like, okay, I'll do it. I'll perform a song. But it wasn't like I was really pursuing it. I was just, I don't know. I was just trying to express myself. And then I just realized, hey,
You might be kind of good. I wrote my first song in 2007, and it was like, I realized this is actually pretty good, and folks seem to like it, and it makes me feel really good. And I feel like I'm supposed to be doing this because five-year-old Joy already knew. It just took some time. I believe as kids, we already kind of know. And then, you know, college comes into play and different things like, oh, you should have this job or you have to think about this. And then we kind of get stirred. We can kind of get turned around. But so I started pursuing probably in like 2011, 2012.
And were you out of college at that time?
Yeah, I don't have a traditional story. I got to college when I actually Katrina semester. So 2005 was my first college semester, and then Katrina messed all that up. And I went to Europe for about 5 or 6 months, and I came back and started college again. And I didn't finish until 2011.
Katrina's happened. You're like, fuck the United States. I'm going to Europe.
Well, you know, it's kind of a long story. I had a first cousin that she's German and Black. And I used to communicate with her because I love languages and I can actually kind of speak some German. And so I was just obsessed with Germany and obsessed with Austria. So I did a semester out there, and it was crazy and amazing. It's a crazy 21-year-old. It was like my first flight, I think, was to Germany, like my first flight ever.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was. I just dove into it. But so, yeah, I just had to take time. I just had to. I don't have a traditional story. I was homeschooled. I forgot to mention that. But
okay, put a pin in that.
Yeah,
I also wanted to get back to the minister thing.
Oh, so of course, we were. Yeah, so I didn't really find my music community until like 2010, 2011, and then it was like, let's do this thing. Like, okay, I'll play here. I will play with you. Yeah, I'll do that. And then it was like yes to everything. And that's where I am right now, pretty much.
Because that's what you do full time, right?
Yeah, I am. When every time somebody asks me that, I'm like, I think I do that full time. How do I do this full time? And then it's like, you know what? Just keep doing it. I don't know. I don't want to mess the streak up, you know. But yeah, I do. I do it full time. I'm getting my life together. COVID has me getting everything together. So I make music.
That's great. So we have a couple of pins, and I'm going to go back to them now so that I don't forget them. What religion were you raised in?
Christian, non-denominational, pretty evangelical. That's what you want to, yeah. If that's what you want
to
use. Yeah,
because I'm always fascinated about queer folks who grew up in religious environments in general, but especially, you said both of your parents were ministers?
Yeah, they founded their church in 1993, and they are ministers, yeah.
Okay, because I always find it interesting when Christian religions do have women ministers. And I don't know, I'm Jewish, so excuse my ignorance about Christian religions, but I always just picture some dude yelling at everybody.
That's usually what it is. But
was it a strict household, or
you know? Let's see. So my parents were strict with like certain things. They were strict with movies. They were strict with like TV shows and music. They weren't really strict with a whole lot of other things. It was more like, can't listen to this. You know, we don't watch this TV show, or we don't watch this. So it was like kind of selectively strict. Let's see. Yeah, I could not listen to secular music. We couldn't listen to secular music. So I had to sneak. I remember when I started to listen to secular music was like, maybe 1998, which was probably like 1997, so that was like Sheryl Crow.
Yeah, I was like, that's when it wasn't even that bad. That's when they still had like innuendos, and they weren't like, I'm gonna fuck the shit out of you. They were like, I'm gonna lay you down. Like, it was just very,
yeah, you know. Everything was very like coded, you know. It wasn't just out blam, you know.
You had to get creative with the way you were saying it.
You had to come with it, you know. You had to
you know, it wasn't just like, fuck this, I'm, you know, this, blah, 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 blah. You know, but I don't know what song that was, but. So yeah, they, it was no secular music. You know, certain TV shows were like a no-no. I remember Roseanne was like, no, you can't watch Roseanne.
Well, now no one can watch Roseanne.
I forgot about that.
Because Roseanne was one of those shows that I grew up with. Darlene from Roseanne was my idol because she was the sarcastic, like, mm-hmm. funny, cool one. Mm-hmm. And then now I'm like, can I not watch that? Can that not be part of my childhood experience? And
right.
I'm just like, God damn it, Roseanne.
Like, she screwed it up. That was just, yeah.
She screwed it up for everybody.
Screwed it up. You know,
but were you a non? I remember with the Simpsons, everyone's like couldn't watch the Simpsons.
No, we could not watch the Simpsons.
Why? I never understood that.
I don't. It was just certain things that they thought were just too edgy. But now Cosby Show, we love the Cosby Show. Like, people called us the Cosbys, you know, because I come from a big family. And so we watched The Cosby. We watched Seventh Heaven.
That everyone was allowed to watch that.
Yeah. We watched Good Times. But so they were strict about certain things. They weren't strict about everything, though, which I guess was good. But yeah, that's the kind of household it was.
I don't know how to ask this, so I guess I'll just ask it. Was there a discussion of queerness in your religion and in your household? Was that something you were aware of from a young age, that like queer exists or queer is bad? Or was that part of anything that you grew up with?
You know, I've been like thinking about this, and nobody explicitly said that it was bad. You just kind of knew. You just, like, my parents never had a conversation about queerness. They didn't even talk about sex, you know. They didn't talk about much. So it was... it was like we were kind of left to just kind of figure things out, which is not the best way to do things. But, you know, I'm sure it's really hard to be a parent. But it was never something that was explicitly said. It was just from church teachings. You can
context
kind of. Yeah, you can. We definitely got the context. So, I mean, everything was about. You finish school, you get married. Who do you get married to? You get married to a man. Or if you're a man, who do you get married to? You find a wife. So it's just like, well, yeah, it's pretty anti-queer. So
yeah, because it doesn't leave room for any other options.
It doesn't leave room for like not getting married or or not having kids. And I was never a little girl to like plan her marriage or like, I want to marry this kind of guy or I want to do, I never did that. And I guess when I start to think about it, it's like, maybe I was just never feeling the whole thing. I just always kind of knew that there was something more. I just always felt like there was something more. I liked guys, but I just always felt like, I don't really want to do that. Like, I might do it, but it's not something that I'm really seeking out. And I kind of knew that there wasn't space for that. So I just kind of didn't really talk about it much. You know, I would have my occasional crushes on people, but it was just like, sometimes it felt like, I think he's cute, but I think I'm good too. it's not like, oh my God, this one guy. I just sort of always felt like this disconnection I don't want to say a disconnection to sexuality, because I think I kind of had a healthy sexuality that I buried a little bit because I just didn't see my place. So, yeah.
For me, and I don't know, I didn't grow up in a particularly religious environment, but when I really first started to notice, hey, I think I'm thinking about this a little differently than others, was just, I think about 12 or 13 when my friends all started being boy crazy.
Yeah.
And I couldn't relate, but I tried so hard.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I feel that. My sister would go to parties. She would go to dances. And I never, I guess I always felt like pressure too. I kind of felt that same pressure. Like,
I don't really want to try to go talk to these boys. I feel like it's not really what I want to be doing. I just want to sit in my room or sit and play my guitar and like just chill out and just totally be myself. Because I think just that whole dynamic, I just felt like I was on display, and I didn't like that dynamic. And I think I knew that at like 13, 14, you know, it just wasn't really my scene, and it didn't make me comfortable. So I was totally fine with just like playing guitar, playing guitar to my dog, playing to my cat, so something like that.
Yeah, you know? That was me. I was like, I'm going to focus on my studies.
Yeah.
I got to focus on my studies. I don't have time for this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So this is the way I ask the coming out question. I've tried to find a different way to ask it, but I think this is the way to kind of encompass everything, because coming out isn't just like this one everyone wants to like reduce it to this one moment where it's like, well, when did mm-hmm. you first come out? But
yeah.
I think it's so much more than that, because I think it's like an onion. There's like layers. So I think there's the layer of like, when did you come out to yourself? And then there's the layer of, when did you say it out loud to somebody else? And then when did you come out to friends and family? And then when, if, mm-hmm. and I don't know if you're out on stage to the public, you know, when did that happen?
Man, you know, it's so many layers with me, because the first time I verbally came out, I came out to one of my good friends, Monica Dillon. First came out to her, and she was like, oh yeah, I already knew. I was like 28, maybe. I was up there, you know? It was probably 27 or 28. And she was like, oh yeah, I totally. She's like, yeah, you know? And she's also queer. And so I found community. So I felt really comfortable telling her, because she was also queer. And I felt like, okay, should I take a step? I'm definitely going to tell her first, because I know it's pretty easy. Second person I came out to both of my sisters, and then I came out to my brothers. And it was a couple years until I came out to my parents. And that was, I call it the hardest conversation I've ever had to have with anybody. And I felt like it was the first adult conversation I'd ever had with my parents. I sat down with them one day. I think this was like 2018. And I said, okay, I was thinking to myself, why am I doing this again? Like, this is like, why do they need to know? Because I don't tell them much of anything else. So why do they need to, why am I doing this? And so so I was like, okay, I said, I am with somebody. I have somebody special, but it's not a man. So it was like, I went this roundabout way, you know, because because I know my parents, you know, and maybe I wanted to soften the blow. And it was rough. It was not an easy thing. They did not receive it well. And
I'm sorry to hear that.
It was kind of, it was like a gut punch, but we've been working through that. And I think it's good and it's healthy, and there's growth there. Now, coming out to myself is almost something that I have to continually do, because it's way more than just saying I'm queer. It's more of showing it, like trying to acknowledge my partner more. Like, I think that was like a big thing for me, because I'm so close to my family, and my family is really important to me. And I feel like once I could share that part of my life, then I could continuously come out to myself and totally be comfortable and totally be my full self. And it is still a journey. And my family has actually been pretty great. Like, my siblings are awesome. My parents are still awesome. My mom is great. I still love them. It's just one of those things where, hey, people get used to it, and that's what it is. And love them the same. And I know they love me. So.
And at the end of the day, I feel like a lot of folks, that's what they realize is, hey, I love this person and they love me.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, you know, this is not something that I was ready for, that I completely understand, but I will work on on that understanding.
Yeah.
Because I want my child in my life.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
So when you were talking, when you were deciding to come out to your parents, you said you were asking yourself why. Like, yeah. What in that moment was the answer to that question where you're like, why?
Because I knew that I had to be true to myself. And since my family is so important to me, like, I talk to them all the time and I love them so much, I couldn't continually split myself because it was unhealthy. It was like they knew half of me. Like, my parents didn't know me. My family didn't really know me. So I felt like it was just time. It was like, Joy, I'm too old to be like parsing my life like this. Like, it's got to be all in one box. Never, like, I'm tired of having these separate boxes. And because it's driving me crazy. It was just complicated. Like, I couldn't bring my partner to certain things because I wasn't comfortable, and it was just extra work, and it was just an extra burden to carry. And I think I realized that, and I didn't want to live like that. So that's why the hard choice, and I had to have the hard conversation.
And you're glad you did?
I'm so glad I did. Like, it's been actually great. I think coming out to my parents was tough, but I feel like they actually know me now. I feel like it's just gotten a lot better. And it's definitely a journey. I'm trying not to say too much. I'm not angry at my parents or anything. It's just a growth. It's totally growing pains and
yeah, no, it is a beautiful thing. You know, this is a beautiful thing that you're like, hey, you get to know all of me now. You get to know every part of me now. And, you know, it's probably opened up your relationship, and it might take time. It might have taken some time, but it's going to get to the place where it's going to be better than it ever could have. I really believe that.
Yeah. So I think the hard conversation had to happen because I think they know me now, and I know that they know me now, and my parents still love me. And that was like my biggest fear. Like, what is going to happen? Like, if I come out to my parents, like, I know that they are not down with this, but I still have to tell them because I can't hide it anymore, you know?
Yeah. And a lot of it is the having the conversation, and for you to, you know, say to them, whatever conversations you want to continue to have, I'm happy to have them, because that's why I, you know, when I asked the question, it's layers, because it's not just a one-time thing. Yeah. Some people have to come out to their parents multiple times. Some people, you know, I also think that with the coming out question, what's so, I think, interesting is, I think for me, it's like I carried that around so long, not just the fact that I'm gay, but the fear and the knowing that this moment is going to happen, whereas this other person has no idea that this moment is going to happen.
Yeah. Yes. You know what? That is perfectly stated, because I'm sitting there thinking, like, I'm about to change everything right now. Like, why do I want to do this? What's so important about this? But yes. Yes.
Yeah. And you have the time to reflect, and you're thinking of how to say it. And I know for me, I was just like, oh, they know, like, this will be no surprise. And it was very much a surprise. So, you know, I understand that too.
Yeah. Right. Right. Exactly.
So what would you like for your future? This is the future question. We've gone to the past, and now we'll go to the future. As far as your career, as far as, you know, do you want to stay in New Orleans forever? If money was no object, if you could travel around and play music for folks, if money was no object, would you want to tour big stadiums? Would you want to play dive bars? Would you want to just record music? Would you want to, you know, do music forever, do something else? Like, what does that look like for you? Your ideal, your dreams. What are your dreams?
What are my dreams? You know, ever since I was a kid, there were three things I wanted. I wanted a pair of boots, I wanted a guitar, and I wanted a horse. So I've got the boots, I've got the guitar, and now I want a horse. So I would, at some point in my life, I would love to own some land with some horses and also play music.
all at once. You want to play music on a horse with
your cool boots? Definitely. On just traveling like by horseback because it's going to be the apocalypse. So no, I was just joking. No,
that's actually very smart because if everything goes to shit, we're not going to be able to get gas or fix cars.
Right.
You know, it's going to take you a couple extra days, but you'll be able to get places.
Exactly. I would love to. I'm a traveler. I would love to travel the world and play music, dive bars, stadiums, whatever. That's stadiums. I'm not sure how long it's going to take that to come back, but music will always be there because music is my gateway. That's the gateway to joy. And kind of sounds like the name of an album or something.
Yeah, write that down.
Gateway to joy. Write that down. Definitely travel, music goes together. Those are the things that kind of make me happy.
I miss traveling so much. I'm so like in some ways, because all my travel plans got canceled. So I was like, oh, good, I have money for once. And yeah. It's not just paying off these trips, you know, as they come up. But I miss it so much. I mean, we're halfway through summer, and I would at least go to like Biloxi, Mississippi, like just an hour away, just to get away. And I haven't done that. What's your ideal vacation spot? Like,
man, I've been to South Africa, I've been to Ghana, I've been to Europe, I've been to Sweden and all that. I would love to go back to Africa. I would love to visit Ghana again. I would go back to the motherland. Yeah.
That's so cool. You've had opportunities to travel. And yeah, I keep telling my girlfriend, she doesn't have her passport yet. I'm like, girl, you got to get your passport because they might cut them off soon.
Hey, get it. I've been telling my family that. I've been saying, look, y'all, I firmly believe everybody needs to have the passport. Just get them updated. Just
in case. Like, you can't go anywhere without the passport. So exactly. At least if you have the passport, it's like the secret. You're like putting it out there.
Exactly. Into the world. Yeah. People need to know. Get the passport. It does more than a license.
Yeah. It has been so cool to finally get a chance to talk with you. I've really enjoyed this conversation.
Oh, thank you. It was something I was shirking for a while because it was extremely intimidating, but
I'm not that scary.
I am glad I did it. No, thank you for pursuing.
If you want to give folks your social media and if you have any shows coming up or anywhere they can find you.
Okay. Oh, my social media, you can find me on all social media platforms at Joy Clark Music. I've got music on Bandcamp. You can search Joy Clark. Don't have any shows coming up right now, but just follow me. I might do a random live video or something. So just follow me. Follow me, y'all.
They will. Everyone will follow you. We follow you, and we're so happy to have you. And folks, stay tuned. We're going to play one of Joy's songs after this episode. So thank you so much, Joy.
Yeah. Thanks, Amanda.
Cardinal flies by. insecurities, but then a little voice inside tells me I'm gonna be all right. I am everything I need. All I gotta do is sing. La la la, 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 la la la. Now if I could stay, I would stay here with my blanket and my ginger beer, rocking solo to the songs I hear, the songs I hear.
To our guest, Joy Clark, for sharing her world with you. Special thank you to Jessa Fallon and Ryan Golub for your help editing and producing the podcast. Please find us on social media. Say hello. We're on Instagram and Facebook at Near and Queer to My Heart. We're on Twitter at Queer to My Heart. Also, if you have an iPhone, go on your podcast app, give us a review. We'd love to see 5 stars. Thank y'all.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.